They say when a baby is born, so is a mother. But while you are there to help your baby grow into the person he or she is meant to be, who is there to help you? Many women feel lost and alone when they become mothers, wondering, who am I now? Sometimes it feels like the transformation from woman to mother is as radical as a caterpillar's transformation into a butterfly. Did you know that inside the chrysalis, the caterpillar literally turns into goop before it rearranges itself into a butterfly? This podcast is about the goop, what soul transformation looks like as you transition from being a woman to a mom. Your baby's growth matters, but yours does too. You're not alone. I'm your host, Brittany Ming. Welcome to the Motherhood Metamorphosis.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of the Motherhood Metamorphosis. My name is Brittany Ming. I'm your host, and today we're talking to Sarah Rogers. Sarah lives in the east of England and is a home-educating mother of five boys, age 4 to 13, some neurospicy, their term, and a cat and a dog who require less educating. She has a fairly useless but fascinating degree in Arabic, art history, and archaeology, which is fascinating. Let me just chime in there. And is rated on average an adequate cook by her children, and is married to Tim, a pastor overseeing 8 churches in chocolate box rural English villages. She would love to pursue further study in her rather niche area, but life is not making that possible right now. I love your bio, Sarah, and I'm so happy that you came on my podcast.
It's so good to be here. Thank you.
We talk all the time, but this is our first face-to-face, actually like voice-to-voice talking, though we have sent each other some rather hilarious voice messages over Facebook Messenger, which I have very fond memories of.
Yes, as long as you don't release those, I don't think they're suitable for
mass hearing. They are not for public consumption.
Yes.
So I love background stories, and I think we have a really interesting one. We have never met in real life. No. But we have visited many of the same places.
Yeah.
Because I lived in England, in East England, where you live, for 3 years. And we met via a Facebook homeschooling group. But I didn't know there were a lot of English people doing this homeschooling curriculum. Sunlight, which we both did for a short period of time. You are continuing to do Sunlight.
Yeah.
And you sent me a message because you were like, I snooped on your page and I just wanted to send you a message. I think that's how it started.
I think it was they'd sent you entirely the wrong order. And I just felt so bad for you. And I was like, I have a zillion books. I've probably got some that you need. Let me bring you books. And you were like, who is this weird woman? Why is she offering to drive around the countryside and bring me books? But it was COVID and I hadn't seen another grown up for too long.
I understand that desperation. I too was desperate. I was like crying over books. So it was an interesting time. So
yes.
But we have discovered we have a lot in common. We both have 5 kids and we have 9 boys between us both. I just counted that up. I have 4 boys and you have 5 boys. And I also have 1 girl. So 10 children and 9 boys in between us. So we are actually going to be talking about what it's like to be mothers of many, many boys, and also gender disappointment, which before we just started, I was saying, I don't think very many people like to talk about this. It's almost embarrassing, or there's this weird shame that people like to pile on you, or they like to say, well, at least you don't have girls. Like people would say, well, at least you're avoiding the drama with having all boys. I'm like, have you heard of rage quitting? I mean, there's some drama going on with boys.
I haven't met my 13-year-old, those ones.
I know.
Tell me, drama with boys.
Tell me how it could be worse. So,
yes, that would be something.
So can you tell us, you said your boys are ages 4 to 13. So, and my boys are ages 16, 11, 9, and then my daughter is 4. So, I don't know. Let's start at the very beginning. When you imagined having children, what did you imagine your family would look like?
I think I made a fair assumption that I would have a decent mixture. I mean, I always wanted 5. I thought, you know, I have 2 brothers and 3 seemed like an easy ride in my pre-parenthood world. So I thought 5, that sounds like a sensible and nice number. And oh, if I could talk to myself now. So I thought no, do you know what? Five is where it's going to be at, and I'll probably have the mixture of girls and boys. This was before Tim and I married. This was before we'd even started thinking about that. I just was like, we're going to push for five. And when we got to three, Tim was like, do you know what? That's quite a lot of children already. That's more than the English average. So, and I was like, ah, we're only just getting started. It'll be fine. And at that point, he sort of rolled his eyes. And then, well, do you know, another two kids turned up, like they do. And
like they do.
Like they do. So I think I had my first two, Isaac and Inigo. So they're less than 2 years between them. And they just sort of came along and everyone was like, oh yeah, two boys. And I thought, oh, they'll play together so nicely because they'll be so close in age. Chalk and cheese. Those boys could not be more different if they tried. Like one likes cars, the other one likes animals. One likes food, the other one only eats apples. And, you know, they could not be different, more different. And then the third one came along and my sister-in-law went, she's lovely. She went, I hope this one's a girl. And I was like, well, you know, what's the likelihood? Three boys? Probably it will be. And I was picking out the same girls' names again and from the app. And I was thinking, yeah, you know, those are nice girls' names, like Genevieve and Iris and Hannah. Lovely girls' names. But then Raphael came along and he wasn't a girl. Then, you know, with three children, you can keep the same car. So that was fine. And then we got the fourth. And yeah, crazy story. After number four, Josiah was born, had to buy a new car. And I was driving around, he was a week old. And I thought, I'm just going to pop into the shop because I only have one child with me and you can pop with one. And I had him strapped on my front and he wasn't a small baby. He was, well, 10 pounds eight in English. I don't know, quite a lot of baby. And I walked into the shop and he was obviously new. And a woman said, oh, is that your first one? And I went, no, he's my fourth boy. And she said, oh, that's a shame. And I went, it was like my mama bear came out. And I was like, no, it's not. He's lovely. And she looked a bit sheepish and scuttled off.
As she should have. Because yeah, how dare you like, say that about my brand new baby, fourth boy.
I know. You should have been like woohooing me or something. And then I think everyone just sort of gave up on me by the time I had number five and it was another boy. And they were like, she's obviously insane. And the only one who pays you any respect, at least over here, is the midwives. When you've got five, they listen to you and they take your opinions. And they're like, we understand, you know what you're doing. Everyone else, and they're like, you've lost it.
Yes.
head for the hills.
Obviously have no idea what's going on in life.
Yeah, exactly. You should get a television and just chill out.
Yes, so, we get that. That's a common, the television comment is a common thing over here. So that translates to both cultures. So apparently.
That's all right then. Yeah. I'm a little paranoid about being too English.
No, I want all the Englishisms. And if people are confused, they can just message me and be like, Brittany, what does that mean? And I'll translate for them.
We can have a little glossary for afterwards.
Yes, the glossary. Just scroll down to the notes so you can see the glossary. No, I am absolutely delighted. And it's just, you know, filling that little English part of my soul that I had to leave 3 years ago. So, yes. Well, so then five boys. And then you guys are, you're done, right? You think that you're done. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And we did have a miscarriage last year and we were fairly sure that she was a girl. So that kind of rubs salt in the no girl wound a little bit. But I think when they're babies, it doesn't really matter in the same way. Like, you know, you can dress them up and put bows on their head and they don't take them off. Well, I mean, as much as any baby keeps anything on. And you can put them in whatever colours you like and no one really pays any attention, especially with number five. And we've always been kind of gender neutral with the toys we've been buying. I've got dolls in the house. I've got stuffies of every conceivable animal. And I think it's only now that the oldest one's a teen and the little one is We call the little one the raccoon because he's just trouble all the time. Now he's like a rising five. And I'm realizing I've never tied a plait in anyone else's hair. I've never put a bow on anyone's head. And I've never pushed those wriggling legs into tights. Those are things I'm never going to have. And it's kind of a bit like, oh, it's beginning to push my buttons at this point in a way that it didn't so much when they were babies.
So I think, I don't know, maybe there's something about having one of each. Or, you know, you think, at least in America, we say, oh, a boy and a girl, perfect American family. I don't know if you have that saying in England, like, oh, perfect English family. In America, it's like the boy and the girl, you've got your little football player, and then you have your little princess. Like, it's like you have the perfect family.
Yeah, I think it's very much like storybook world, isn't it? It makes it easier for the stories to have whole everything. And the mummy plays with the daughter and the daddy takes with the son and it's all good.
Yes. I grew up with, I'm one of five, but I had four sisters. There were four girls. And then my brother was the youngest. So he was kind of the surprise baby. And it's actually exactly the opposite in my family where I have four boys and then one girl. So when I imagined having children, I imagined having daughters because I grew up with girls. And then when I had these twin boys, I was just baffled. I didn't know what to do with boys. I was a very girly girl. I was like always the one playing tea party and dress up, and I had so many dolls. And I just had no idea what to do with these boys. And my husband was like, you have to get them outside. You have to exercise them. And I'm like, what? And it was just, I had a huge learning curve having boys. And then we had twins. It was a shock. And, you know, two babies when you're 22 years old or 23 is a lot of change. And so we waited 5 years before we had another. And we thought, oh, we'll have a girl and then we'll be done, you know? Well, then we had a boy and we were happy and it was exciting, but I still had that, like, really want a daughter. Like I had this longing in me to have a daughter. And so we thought, okay, we want to, and because there were 5 years in between Silas and our twins, we thought, okay, we want to have another one that's close in age to Silas. And so the next one, the fourth, they were going to be about 2 years apart. And I remember having this big freak out, this internal freak out right before we went in for our gender ultrasound around 20 weeks.
Yeah.
And also it was compounded by the fact that, I don't know, I was losing my mind. We'll blame it on pregnancy. Silas, who is two, wanted to see my wedding ring. And so I was like, okay, I'll let you hold my wedding ring. Never give your wedding ring to a two-year-old. Temporary insanity, okay? Because 15 seconds later, he had lost it. The morning, so this is the morning before my ultrasound. So the whole morning, I'm tearing the entire house apart looking for my wedding ring, but also having this freak out of like, what if it's a boy? What if it's a boy? What if it's a boy? And I just had to have this like come to Jesus moment and be like, Brittany, it could very well be a boy. And what are you going to do with that? And I felt like also there were a lot of other people like rooting for a girl. And I felt like if it was a boy, somehow I'd be letting them down. I don't know. Yeah. Did you ever feel that way?
Yes. Totally. I had people saying, oh, I've got some lovely dresses to pass on to you. Or, oh, you know, when she's born, then she'll be able to do this. And especially with Columba, the youngest, because then she'll have four older brothers. Imagine growing up with four older brothers. Well, Grace does. Imagine growing up with. Wouldn't that be so cool when she's dating and like looking years, like decades down the line?
Yes.
I'm like, can we just focus on getting the baby
here,
pregnancy and out? And then we will talk about when she's getting married or he's getting married.
Yes.
Other people's expectations as well as your desires that you keep in a little packet of girls' clothes that you keep in your closet. And you think, I could do that. It could be a girl. I mean, every pregnancy is obviously 50-50. And but it's the same thing again and again, just trying to make sure that you guard your heart against too many expectations from outside, I think.
I know. So I had that, like, before that appointment, I just was thinking, I'm like, why do I want a girl And I wanted a girl for me. You know, I wanted to know what it was like to have a daughter. I wanted to know, like, I don't know. I think that that was just a huge desire of my heart to have a daughter. And, but then I thought, why do I want to have another baby? And I wanted to have a sibling for Silas. And so all this is going through my head as I'm looking for the wedding ring and waiting for this appointment. And by the time I had the appointment, I had found my ring, and I had in my heart, I was like, if it's a boy, it's okay. You know, they can share a room. They can, they're going to be best buddies. Like, just like your older two, they're going to be best friends. They're not best friends. They fight a lot. And I don't know. They share a room and they share clothes, but they are not best buddies. So these dreams you have, I think maybe the dream to have a daughter, the dream that your kids are going to be best friends, you can't help it. It is just like, it happens in like the second you find out you're pregnant, you're, this whole child's life like spreads out before you in this imaginary realm.
Yes.
And I think sometimes if you have multiple and multiple and multiple children of the same gender, and then you are done having children, because five children is a lot of children, you have that grief left over that, oh, I'm never going to be able to do the braids, and I'm never going to be able to do the tights. And before, when we had Eli, he was our fourth boy, we decided to be done having kids. We know how that went. But but really, that was, I had to grieve. I was like, I'm not going to have a girl. That dream is gone. Like, I need to be done having kids. I was really needed to recover, like, physically and emotionally from being pregnant. And my kids didn't sleep. I didn't sleep for like 3 years, literally. Yeah. So I know you know how that is, because we talk about sleep a lot. But I really had to grieve that dream. Has that been an internal thing for you? Like, grieving over not having a daughter?
Yes. Yeah. And it's sort of a multi-stage thing. So there's the tights and the braids and the cutesy putting, you know, pigtails on someone. I cut all the boys' hair myself, so everyone is short back and sides because I'm not that good a hairdresser. but I think it's also the looking forwards in time and seeing the stereotype of mums and sons on the TV shows and saying, oh, you know, the son hasn't phoned his mum for a month is the stereotype. And I know there's boys who do stay in touch with their mums more, but I look at my own brothers and I say, gosh, I speak to my mum at least once a day. She calls me for chats and for help and for little bits and pieces. And, you know, I'm really blessed in the relationship I have with my mum now. And I'm glad I'm here to help her. But my brothers speak to her like once a fortnight, once a month. You know, she has to chase them. Are you available to talk to me? Mm-hmm. Whereas I think because I'm a woman and I'm at home with the kids, and she doesn't really get the boundaries of I'm home educating and I'm really doing some school time stuff between like 9 and 12. Those are my high school time hours. I've had enough caffeine. They've had enough sleep. We're good. But after lunch, it all falls to bits a bit.
As it does.
Just life in general after lunch. It's a bit of a downhill slope till bedtime. But what's it going to look like in the future? That was also something I had to process and grieve over in a way, because I like the chatty relationship I have with my mom. I like being there for her. And I watched my mum's relationship with my grandma, and that relationship was something I aspired to for me and for the next generation. But where's that going to come from? So that was a sort of hole that I have to acknowledge and say that is there. And I think there's also the grief of when I was a kid or a young woman, my relationship with my mum wasn't so great, and I had things in my childhood or the way I was brought up that I would change if I could. You know, I would not pass that on to the next generation. I would be proactively stopping that and making it different. You know, I've done a lot of work on who I am and how I got to who I am. And I've understood things about the female experience and how to grow up in a female body, which was never passed on to me. Like things like, if you drink loads of water, your period cramps will be better. You know, no one told me that.
Yeah.
I had to work that out. But I thought, oh, yeah, I could pass that little nugget on to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Like my son's future wives, bless their souls, they'll need it. They're going to figure that out by themselves, hopefully, by the time they're at marrying age. You know, is that a conversation people have with their grandmothers? I don't know, but that's a whole lot of life down the line. I might have forgotten it by then. Who knows? Yeah. I think the opportunity, knowing the mother voice that I have in my head from my mum, and sometimes it can be a bit negative, and the opportunity to be a positive female voice to your own daughter and whisper those assurances into her ear, which I don't have. That's a really powerful and beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very aware that that's not part of my story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I could tell my boys all these things about how to be a woman, but they don't have the maturity or the interest.
Right. They don't care. Yeah. Or it's embarrassing or whatever. Yeah. I've tried to share those things too with my sons. Like, there's a whole other half, 50% of humanity experiences menstruation, you know, like this is part of life. And they're like, Mom, you know, like, and I'm very scientific and like telling these things. I'm like, you need to understand these things. And here are some things you could say. And this is how you can be a gracious man, you know, if you're in a friend's life or a partner's life. And they're like, Mom, I'm like, take it to heart, okay?
Just
but it is.
Store these things for future reference.
Yes, store it up in your brain. Someday it's going to come.
And you will have someone grateful to you that you know that.
Yes. Yes. I remembered when, because there are 4.5 years in between my youngest son, Eli, and my daughter, Grace, when she was born. And so I do remember having to come to peace with that, because we were not planning on having any more kids when I got pregnant with her. It was a huge shock and I did not want to be pregnant. I really struggled with the fact of having another child, whether it was a boy or a girl. I was max out. And but I remember a specific day we were in church and we were sitting, my husband and I were sitting, and in the pew in front of us was a family, and they had older boys, not four, but older boys, and then a little girl who was probably a toddler. And she was playing with them and doing peekaboo, and like, she was so cute. And I remember my husband and I just looked at each other, and it was kind of like a little moment of understanding that we both saw this little girl, and we knew that maybe could have been, you know, like, and we didn't know, like, you don't know your future, you know, like, we didn't know, but we had already said no more kids. And and we thought, oh, would it be so sweet to see a little daughter with our older boys. I think that acknowledging the grief that I think it's really important to acknowledge the grief of gender disappointment.
Yeah.
Because I think any type of grief that is unacknowledged comes out sideways, and it just is not healthy for you, or it can be unhealthy for people in your life. And I heard this, I knew somebody was married to a family and married into a family. They had 7 sons. And the youngest son was named Jamie Lynn. That's a girl's name. And that was the youngest son they had. And I think that mom, I don't think that's a gen. I mean, like, so there are some boys named Jamie, but with the Lynn attached.
Yeah, that's a big girl, boy named Sue territory, isn't it? But
yeah. And I just thinking, like, that mother wanted a girl so badly that she didn't even switch gears. She like picked out her girl name and she gave it to that child. And that was her son. And I don't know what her story was, but I think maybe she was intensely disappointed.
Yeah. Maybe there was some grief working out sideways there
that
she didn't deal with properly.
Yeah. But... and I think that that can be just really hard. But I don't think a lot of people like to say, oh, I'm disappointed that I have 4 boys or 5 boys. And I never had a girl because sometimes that makes you ungrateful for your healthy children or
Yeah.
something like
I mean,
that.
I've never looked at my son and gone, I wish you were a girl.
Yeah.
And I've never sat or cried when one of the sonographers at the ultrasound was like, it's another boy. You know, that was the last one. He was like splayed, like arms akimbo. He was like a starfish out there. And I was like, you don't even need to
You're
go
like,
through
I know.
I recognize that. But yeah, he's still much the same today, to be honest. He doesn't very well wear clothes very often.
So I know that I did end up having a girl, and it has been a very special experience. And I really think it has like filled that little place in my heart that wanted to have a girl. So I don't think that my longing was misplaced, like having a girl is overrated or it's the same thing as having a boy. And I know that when I did have my boys, and Grace was born when my oldest sons were almost 12. So I had 12 years of having, you know, I was just a boy mom.
The boy stuff, yeah.
I do know that when I was grieving not having a girl, I comforted myself with the thought that maybe one day I'll have amazing daughters-in-law, and then maybe one day I'll have a granddaughter. And I think, you know, it's kind of the same thing of that little, you find the positive pregnancy test, and then your whole like story plays out. I think that was me playing out my story in a way that was giving comfort to myself and realizing, okay, I want to raise really good men to be good partners and good husbands and good fathers, and then maybe one day I'll have a little granddaughter, or I'll have a daughter-in-law and I can have a great relationship with her. But I do know that that was hard, and I was happy with my boys, but I was sad not to have a daughter.
Yeah. And I think I'm not actively sad all the time that I don't have a girl. You know, I'm not jealous for my friends who do have girls. I love seeing their relationships with them. I wonder about, I just wonder at the beauty of having a mother-daughter bond with someone. But, you know, especially when I'm pulling the raccoon out of a mud pit or stepping over a pile of wrestling bodies, like some people don't experience this, or even you, like you mopping up the bathroom floor again or the seat.
Like, oh, yes.
I think I'm not jealous for them. And I don't know, godparents and godchildren are a big thing in the States, because
for some circles, here. Not in my circle, but some circles do have godparents.
And I think, you know, so I sort of wish for a goddaughter. I do have one goddaughter, and she is very lovely. I love her very much, but she has learning differences, and she's not someone who would be comfortable receiving all the daughter love that I would like to pile on a person. That would be just way out of her zone of comfort or ability. So but people don't tend to ask parents of five to be godparents, I've noticed.
Their hands full.
I think they might think we're busy for some reason. I can't imagine why.
Maybe that's why I've never been asked to be a godparent. Never connected that.
So and I think that, yeah, I'm still a work in progress in the grieving it department, but it comes when like people are like, oh, didn't you get a girl? Or you trying to try for any more? And in fact, when we had the miscarriage, I got the positive pregnancy test on the same day that my husband had the booking appointment for the vasectomy. And I was like, well, this is the last chance saloon. So let's see what we're going to do with this one. You know, I wasn't expecting that pregnancy that didn't finish in a baby. And that felt like very much like this is the last go, the last roll of this dice. And we were really sure that she was a girl.
But I know. That was so hard.
I know.
Feel for you a lot on that.
So I think that now that the raccoon is four, I've got more time to process and more time to reflect on all that my life is or isn't, or things I have and don't have, not just in girl boys, but, you know, in academia and in reading books and in where I shop. Yeah, I can actually think about things now that he's not now that he's not three, and he causes less havoc now. He sits in the same place for sometimes as much as 30 seconds.
It's amazing. It's a miracle.
Woohoo! He hasn't destroyed anything today. Did I send you a photo when he just put a hole in the wall?
Yes, I think you did.
Riding yes. something down the stairs. Of course you did. Why would you do that?
Of course, there's the hole in the wall. I am unfazed. I'm like, any boy moms who sent me those things, I was like, but of course there's a hole.
I have to patch that up. Hooray for polyfiller.
Yes.
But I do think it's part of the human condition to just always think about the road that you haven't traveled, the path untrodden. Whether you made a conscious decision to have a baby or not have a baby, or whether you just ended up with five boys and you thought you were going to get a girl, you can always, and of course the girl that I didn't have is the ideal girl. She's beautiful and she's gifted and she's talented. She probably plays the harp. She never has a bad temper or throws her toys out the pram. And contrasting her with my very real boys, who have their own delightful personalities, but they're less ideal than the pretend children that I had before I was, I had in my head before I had children.
Yes.
You know, they're never going to come off favorably. So I'm sure there's all sorts of people like to tell me all the problems there are with having girls.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's so much drama. There's so much hair down your drain. There's.
I do notice that girl houses smell a lot nicer than boy houses.
They probably do. But they still go through puberty. So I've heard that, they still have their stinky stages. So I don't know. I'll let you know.
I went to a boarding school. So I shared a house with 50 other girls, pubescent girls, and it still smelled better than the boys' houses of 50.
I'm sure. Because they shower boys. More. Yeah.
They do. Yeah. It was a whole lot of things. But I think, we're just programmed to look at the road that we didn't go on and ponder that, I think.
I think that you've hit on something that is so important in motherhood, is this idea of the ideal versus the reality. You know, I'm just thinking back to that metaphor of being in the goop. Like, you have this idea of what, you know, being the butterfly is going to be like, and then you all dissolve into the chrysalis, and then you come out and it's something completely different than maybe what you thought it would be. And I think that's motherhood, you know, whether or not, like, I don't know, you never know who you're going to meet when you meet your child.
Yeah.
And you don't even know who you are going to meet when you meet yourself, because you are transforming along with your child. And I know that as I came to accept the fact that I had four boys, and then I had to accept the fact that I was going to have five children when I really was done having kids. But I look back, I was just looking at a ton of Grace's baby pictures yesterday, and I thought, that was one of my happiest babyhoods. And maybe it was because she was a girl, but I think it's because she was my fifth kid. And I knew what to do. You know, I knew how to take care of a baby. I knew how to take care of older kids while I had a baby. I knew what to freak out about and not what to freak out about. And it was just good. And so I think that there's just this wisdom that comes with experience. But there's also this ability to expand our acceptance around our stories the longer that we're living it. But I think that the flip side of acceptance is that grief. You know, it's like that, wow, I never, you know, get to have a girl.
If you don't let yourself grieve, then you're not going to let yourself be able to accept fully.
Yes, exactly.
So they are so entwined, those two things, that if you don't have one, you can kiss goodbye to the other.
And maybe that can prevent you from enjoying the children that you actually have versus the children that you imagined that you would have. Or you might name your kid Jamie Lynn when they're a boy.
Yeah. Poor Jamie Lynn.
Yeah. So, I think that also you said that as your kids have gotten older, you have realized, oh, I haven't had this experience, and I probably won't have maybe this exact experience because I have all sons. I know that my imagination would run to things like, I'm never going to get to go wedding dress shopping and those types, or do the prom, the big prom dance we have in the States. Do you have an equivalent of that? Something that's special?
It's coming in now. I mean, we did have we had a leavers ball at my boarding school. So that sounds like a very English version. The leavers ball, darling.
The leavers ball, yes.
Yes. And so we all the boys wore tuxedos, and we all wore ball dresses, like something from a fairy tale. And that was it. But now there's like they seem to be, because we're not in the school system, I don't fully understand it, but there seem to be like at 16 and 18 and 12. How many times?
Nine.
How many proms are there? Do you have one for like finishing your SATs when you're nine?
Yeah, I think it's those lost milestones that I think can continue to hit, you know?
And then I guess, you know, all the way through to pregnancy and the next generation of my daughter that isn't, you know, all the wonderful advice I could give to a pregnant, smaller, younger version of me.
Yeah.
Just don't freak out. But I don't know, maybe a mother-in-law, mine wasn't well enough to tell me about pregnancy. Mm-hmm. When I was pregnant, even with Isaac, she was suffering from the beginning of Alzheimer's then. So we didn't ever have those conversations. So it's just, I don't know. I don't know what mothers-in-law do. I'll try not to be too interfering.
Yes. Yeah. I know. I think it's interesting. We let our imaginations go, but you don't know how it's going to be.
Yeah.
So you never know. You think that you know, and then you don't. And I think that in motherhood, we're always trying to readjust maybe to the story we thought we knew and the story we actually have, and grieve and accept, and it's this back and forth and all the time. And it's hard. I think that's one of like the hardest parts of motherhood, in the internal part, is the accepting and the grieving. We all do it.
I think it's so important to, I have really good friends who you can just talk to or text like a zillion times and just talk it through, and you're really good because you let me process so much stuff. Like, it's me again, texting at 2 o'clock in the morning, your time. Yes, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm probably awake though, because we're so different in the time zone.
Yes. And I think either journaling or talking or just having someone who you can get it out there without feeling judged, and that you can say, gosh, this is really hard, and I'm trying to process all this stuff, and I'm trying to think about what I'm missing out on, but also what I've got. I mean, I'm not going to lie, there is quite a certain cachet to being the one with five boys. It's a bit of a conversation stopper.
Like, it is.
You know, like, wow.
What?
The best one was when I went to, I think I had five, but maybe it was only four at the time. And I took them to the dentist. We all pile into the dentist surgery together out of the waiting room. So, and then they all had their appointments, like open your mouth, yeah, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then whilst we were there, because we were in for about 25 minutes, obviously more people had arrived in the waiting room. And when we came out, they were like, it was like that old Beatles thing with like everyone coming out of the phone box one after the other. And the woman who was in the thing, she was like, gosh, she went very English, gosh, are they all yours? No, I've just gathered up all the children from the village, thought the dentist would be a fun outing. And they said, oh, gosh, she said again, but you look so normal.
That's so much. You're like, well, my husband thinks I'm great, so that's why we have five boys.
Some of the sleepier towns around here, if I walk around with all the boys, and I can hear people going, that's a lot of children. That's a lot of boys. And because they're not perfectly age separated, but their heights are perfectly staggered. Like, they make a very nice line.
The stair steps.
They're just perfectly arranged. I don't know how that worked. And they all look sort of alike, I guess, as much as two people making five people can
yes,
look alike.
Can produce all these children that look alike, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I love stories like that. So great.
And people just look like shocked that one, and now we've had to drive this sort of minibus around virtually just so we can get the kids, and that's quite unusual in this country. There's not that many
massive
cars. I have
to say,
cars.
I will agree with that, because even a minivan, we had a minivan, and even a minivan is not that common, because it's, yeah, if you have a minivan, you have a lot of children, and we had five. But
Yeah.
yes, it is not common in England to have a minivan. You have a little
No.
car, a little bitty
Yes.
car to fit into the little bitty parking spots at Sainsbury's.
I always have to leave my back end overhanging something. So I'm like, we can't park in the middle anymore. We have to park round the edges.
Yes.
Like, I keep saying to us, we're going to get fitter because we're going to be walking all the way from the far corner of the parking
That's right.
places.
We're getting our steps in.
Yes. It's good for us in the end.
Oh, well, I will end with this story before we move into our closing question, because you said, oh, people were talking to you about what if your youngest had been a girl, and then he would have had, or she would have had, four older brothers, and what was that like? So people do make that comment about Grace having four older brothers, but when she was a baby and growing teeth, the boys were very aware that she was using her teeth on them and biting them quite a bit. And so we had a friend come over for dinner, and people love to make this statement. They're like, oh, nobody's gonna mess with your sister. And they always mean because she has four older brothers. But Ben, my son, was like, yeah, she bites. So they didn't even get,
she can stand up for herself.
So define expectations. It wasn't even the fact that she has four older brothers. It's the fact that she bites people. So
yeah. Oh, so true. I want to say that if someone is sad because they've got a boy and they wanted a girl, or if they're sad because they've got a whole pile of boys and they just assumed that they would probably get a girl, or vice versa, that doesn't make them wrong or a bad person or even a bad mother. Mm-hmm. It's just normal. It's a fair assumption. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, if you just had the one and you wanted the opposite, then I think that you had a dream in your head and you had a relationship that you wanted to experience, or you had an experience that you wanted to heal. And I think that those are really valid and so, so, so understandable as motivations for the grief or the disappointment that you might be feeling. And I think that, oh, I don't know, I just want to give her a hug and say, don't take it personally. It's not, you know, we can ask the useless question of why don't I have a girl? But there's never going to be an answer that's like, oh, okay, that's all right then. Yeah, that's a perfect reason why I don't have a girl. That's, mm-hmm. I can take that reason and live the rest of my life without any regret. And I think that, I don't know whether you believe like me that there's a plan, or whether you just believe it's a roll of the dice and it's luck. You know, I think it's important to note that it's not personal. There's no vendetta. You haven't done anything wrong that means you've not got a girl, or you've not got a boy,
or you're not deserving of some,
yeah, some exactly
child there's, that you longed for.
It's like, you know, with, I don't know what the actual statistic is, but 90% of miscarriages, there's nothing that you've done that's caused the miscarriage. And I think it's the same in a way that having the miscarriage helped me to see there's nothing that I've done that caused the miscarriage, and there's nothing that I've done that meant that I've got a whole pile of mad, loud, and quite smelly boys that's caused this. It's just the plan, and that's what we're living with. And I think that it's going to be beautiful. It's going to be fine.
It's going to be fine. And we'll fix
and
the
I have
whole,
a cat.
We'll fix the whole. That's right.
She's just announced her presence. So
that's right.
I have a cat called Lady.
We have a cat named Princess. So you know, it all works out. Oh, she's so sweet. Hi, Lady.
Hates being held.
She's like, really, got her claws out. She's like, ah.
She's really grumpy. She's what my daughter probably would have been like if I'd, if I'd really, actually had her. I'd be like, really
grumpy with their claws out.
Or biting people like
Grace. Biting people. All right. This is such a great conversation. And I want to end with this question. Finish the sentence. I'm really proud of myself for anything, big or small, life goals, or something that happened yesterday.
I'm proud because my eldest has been having some rage and anger issues related to his neurospiciness, we think. And I booked a therapist appointment for him and I saw it through and he's had a therapist appointment and he said it went well. And that's not something that was available in my childhood or that was even, you know, England and squashed emotions. It wasn't something that was ever thought of. And yet I stepped out of my comfort zone and did that and I made it happen.
I'm so proud of you too. I was so happy when you sent that text. So that I shared that with my husband. He's like, that's so great, Brit. And I'm really happy. I'm so happy it went well.
So. Yeah, it did. Even he was like, that was a good session. I was like, how do you know? You've never had one before, but okay, we'll go with that.
He felt it in his gut. He knew it was good.
Exactly.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much. I love talking to you. We are hilarious together. We're hilarious in text and we're even better in person. So I'm so glad we got to do this session together.
It's been good to talk.
Yes.
Hey friends, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Motherhood Metamorphosis. I hoped you enjoyed this conversation and it gave you some good food for thought. If you haven't ever done so, could you hop over to Apple Podcasts on your phone, scroll down, and leave a review? Leaving a review really, really helps boost the podcast visibility in Apple Podcasts, and it encourages me to keep going. It also helps other people find the show, and if you're like me and you are looking for a new podcast, you read reviews and you figure out, hey, is this something that I want to spend my time on? So leaving a review really helps in all those ways. Next, if you'd like to support the podcast financially, I'd encourage you to go to Buy Me a Coffee. You can find the link in the show notes or on the Facebook page, the Motherhood Metamorphosis Podcast. And you can leave a small donation. These help cover the monthly costs and also help cover my time for producing this. There's also some really fun freebies in the shop on Buy Me a Coffee, some art that I've created, and some mental health resources for kids that I would like to share with you. There's also the opportunity to talk with me if you'd like to schedule a virtual coffee and chat. I would love to hear your story, to listen, to hear you, and to give you encouragement in your motherhood journey. Thank you so much for listening today, and I hope you join us next time.
Yay! I'm so glad we're doing this!
I know you! It's so cool to see you and talk to you and like not typing.
I know. I was reading your bio and I'm like, I can hear Sarah reading this in her English accent. And I'm like, what if I tried to read it in the English accent? And then I kept thinking of that time we tried to read the things, the poem in the English accent and American accent. And I think that's like my favorite memory of us because I was just like dying laughing.
My American accent wanders all over the whole continent. I mean, it probably goes between Canada and Mexico. And just when you're changing your nappy.
Cover it up.
Put a thing on it.
Oh my gosh, I remember that when our boys were little. We had twins at the very beginning, yeah. And we just were brand new parents. We had no idea. And then we were trying to change the diaper, and my husband had this cloth diaper, and he just like body slammed that diaper like on top of the baby because it was just like sprayed everywhere, and I'm like screaming because it was coming, it was like literally going over his head into the hallway, it was like that forceful, and I was like but then I was like, maybe you shouldn't slam the diaper on him so hard.
We did elimination communication, e-seeing, so we were holding them over the sink in the when they were tiny, and it was like all over the mirror. I was like, move the toothbrush. And they just come out of the car. And,
piling, like the clown car.
Yes. They just keep coming. people like looking at the other side to see if there's more people going in as there are people coming out.
Yes.
It's...
Oh, we're going to have a visitor. Hello.
Hello.
Say hi, Miss Sarah.
Hi.
Hello, Grace. How are you?
This is my friend Sarah.
Hi.
Hiya. She your hair's got so long.
I know, it is so long. She actually just got a haircut.
I saw. Was that your auntie did that?
Yes, Aunt Chelsea, right? Yeah, what did you come in for?
I love you, Mommy.
I love you too, honey.